This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
This is our fourth year of the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, and to give you an idea of how successful Arkansas has been during that time, this is just the fourth podcast that we've ever done when the Razorbacks are coming off of a series loss. They lost a series at Florida last week. Other than that, they lost a couple of series in 2019, and they lost the Super Regional North Carolina State last year. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter. Bubba, I think that tells you all you need to know about how consistent this program has been and how good they've been, that when they lose a series, it's a really big deal just because it doesn't happen very often.
I tell you, Matt, I think we've gotten spoiled. It's amazing to think of how special that streak is. Honestly, when you look at how strong the SEC is, and people don't realize how hard that is to go 13 series in a row and not lose one. And some of those environments that you're going into on the road, I mean, they're tough to play in. And we saw it this weekend at Florida. A lot of things can happen. You got the elements, you got the wind blowing out. You just got a ton of things going on. You got kind of a questionable strike zone at times. So a lot of things going on, but it really just says how special this program is to go that long and not lose a series.
13 consecutive SEC series. Arkansas had won before losing the final two games to the Gators. Their last SEC series loss was in 2019. But let's just talk about takeaways from this Florida series. Arkansas wins game one. They're feeling really good about themselves because, you know, Florida's pitching had not been real good, real strong until Saturday of the or Friday, game two of the Arkansas series wasn't real strong in game three. It's just that Arkansas couldn't hold Florida's bats down. You're feeling good about where you are because you've beaten Florida's best pitcher, Hunter Barco, who's going to be a number one overall draft pick. And then things just kind of get away from them. I think the thing that stood out to me was that they just didn't get the consistency from their starting pitching, Hagen Smith and Jackson Wiggins, that they've gotten in the weekends previous to the Florida series.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt, but I don't think that they weren't bad. I think we've gotten spoiled. You know, Connor Nolan was awesome Thursday night. Hagen Smith wasn't that bad. I honestly think, you know, going back and looking at the game, watching some of the strikes that were called balls, I really think that affected him. I think he felt like he had to throw it down the middle of the plate. He left a few pitches up and they got hit hard. And I think the wind was a factor. I think a couple of those home runs aren't home runs if they're at Baum Walker. And so I know both teams got to play in the elements, but I don't read a whole lot into that, to be honest with you. And I think the same with Jackson Wiggins on Saturday. You know, 2-3 run homers, and both of those are flyouts at Walker. You know, it just got a couple pitches up in the zone a little bit, and they hit high fly balls. The wind's blowing out 20 miles an hour, and they drift over the fence. You know, a couple 3-run homers can hurt you, and they kind of flip up. That's kind of the way Arkansas plays. You know, they'll get a walk, a base hit, and then boom, they'll drop a 3-run homer on you. And I think that's kind of what happened to us this weekend. But, you know, and I do get it. Both teams have to play in those elements. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get balls up in the wind like we typically do. And so, you know, Florida was, and then we come away with a series loss.
Yeah, I thought the big difference, you mentioned the 3-run home runs. You know, Arkansas got some home runs, but they're all solo home runs during the series there. Now, three of them were solo home runs during game one when they won in Gainesville. There was also a solo home run by Zach Gregory in that third game. But, Bubba, I mean, you know this real well. When you've got runners on base and you can clear, you know, three or four at a time, that makes such a huge difference in a ball game.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, that's kind of what Arkansas's, you know, kind of our go-to thing has been, the 3-run homer. You know, we're able to – And Dave talks about it all the time, how it's so hard in SEC to string together a bunch of hits. It really is. You don't see, you know, a lot of hits consecutive. You know, typically what happens is it's a walk, a base hit, and then boom, you know, a ball in the gap or a ball over the fence. And that's typically how you score your runs in SEC. It's not a whole bunch of hits strung together. And you saw Florida do it this weekend against us.
You know, I thought two things were going to happen this year. More than two things, but two things that I thought were going to happen this year were that Florida was going to get things figured out. They weren't going to stay down forever. That team is way too talented. They've recruited way too well for that to happen. And at some point, Arkansas was going to lose a series. You know, it's so rare to have a season like what they had last season where they didn't lose a series until they got into the Super Regional. I wonder what you think about whether a series loss is good for Arkansas, because, you know, it kind of ends the talk about that streak and finally puts to bed everything that they did last year. And now they can just really focus on the task at hand. Not to say that that was something that was, you know, really on the forefront of the players' minds, but, you know, they hear about that streak and they, you know, they hear about, you know, not losing in so long. I wonder if you think it maybe helps the team relax a little bit moving forward.
I don't know, Matt. I would love to say yes, you're right. It's gonna help. They can just move on and focus on the 2022 season, but I don't think so. You know, as a guy that played, I didn't think about streaks like that. When you step out on the field, you want to beat who you're playing. You want to beat them every game. You don't really think about any streak or anything like that. So I really don't think that's going to have effect on these guys one way or another. I don't think it's an effect on them. Maybe a few of the guys maybe think about it, but I think for the most part, I don't think guys really care about the streak or any of that. They just want to win games and win series.
Of course, Florida players had to watch Arkansas celebrate on the field last season when they won the SEC. Dave Van Horn said going into the series, he said, these are college players. They're going to remember those types of things. You think that played any factor into maybe Florida's motivation for playing the Razorbacks?
Absolutely. I think that had a lot to do with it. Plus, they were struggling. They'd lost 6 conference games in a row. We're coming to town. They remember what happened last year at Baumwalker. So guys do remember stuff like that. Just like let's just say we play NC State this year in a regional or super regional, we're going to remember that, what happened last year. We're going to remember them celebrating on our field. And those are the things that players remember. And I think they kind of felt like, hey, we got to take care of business this weekend. I really think Florida, you know, they played really well all weekend. They did the little things that got the big hit when they needed it. Other than Barco on the mound, kind of showing his butt, you know, Thursday night, I thought for the most part, I mean, Florida played a really good series.
You mentioned game one, Barco. When that game was 3 innings old, it really felt like this is going to be a long night for the Razorbacks. He had retired all 9 batters that he had faced. I think through 3 innings, he had thrown 33 pitches. And Arkansas kind of did what they do. They start taking pitches. They start being a little bit more disciplined at the plate. I think that was a 34-pitch inning. And it only resulted in 1 run, Bubba. But what I thought was really key was that it drove up his pitch count and really made it to where a 7-8 inning game for him became 5-plus innings. And that's kind of what this lineup does. They're kind of sneaky in that way that, you know, it might not look like a productive inning on the scoreboard because it may only be 1 or 2 runs, but it really plays a factor later in the ball games. And you see them do that quite a bit.
I think it's awesome that you said that, Matt, because, you know, when I watch this lineup, I see that it's like early on, it's kind of like early in a boxing match or MMA. They're kind of feeling out their opponent. There may be a jab here or there, but the Razorbacks have a plan going in and they've got a really good scouting report. The staff does a great job of putting together a scouting report on who they're facing that day and who's going to be coming out of the bullpen. So I feel like they're just kind of, you know, just feeling him out the first couple of innings, seeing if what they saw on paper and the scouting, it matches up to what they're seeing with their eyes. And once they put the two together and they get that second time through the lineup, I think that's what really bites you. And they just start to grind out pitches, grind out at bats, and they really wear down that pitcher by seeing pitches, making him work hard. They start fouling off pitches, borderline pitches. And then when they get a pitch over the zone, they crush it. And so it's really fun watching this lineup work when they're working top to bottom. And we still haven't seen it click 100%, but we really did. I saw some really good at bats against Barco, and Barco's got good stuff, but I think it was Barco against Barco. And we can talk about that later. I think he beat himself mentally in that game. I think he let some of our really good at bats get to him and started looking for excuses with the umpire or whatever it is. And then, you know, next thing you know, we're scoring runs on him.
Connor Nolan had a great game at Florida. I mean, what's left to say about Connor Nolan other than that he truly has become a Friday night ace in the SEC? I know this was a Thursday game. They're going to play Thursday against LSU this week. He doesn't have Isaiah Campbell stuff. He doesn't have, you know, Trevor Stephan stuff. But I feel, Bubba, like whenever he goes out on Friday night, you feel as confident right now about Arkansas winning a game as you did with Trevor Stephan, Blaine Knight, Isaiah Campbell, Patrick Wicklander. He's right there with those guys in terms of the consistency that he's giving them, at least at this point in the year.
Absolutely. And so he's a guy that pitches the contact. And when you're he used to be a guy that pitches the contact. Now he's getting a lot of strikeouts. He's got that two seam going. He's got the breaking ball. That curveball is just, I don't want to call it unhittable, but guys just aren't hitting it. So that's what makes Connor so special is, and I've said it before, Matt, if he needs a strikeout, he can dial up a strikeout, but if he needs a one pitch ground ball, he can get that also. What I was going to say is, Tippin, you have a guy that pitches the contact. He's going to have a game eventually where that two-seamer isn't sinking and balls start to get up into the, belt high in the zone and gets hit. That just hasn't happened yet. But I really think he worked so hard this offseason. He's stronger. I think he's got a little edge because he was frustrated last year pitching when he wasn't healthy. And I think that's really helped him. Just his mound presence alone, just his makeup when he steps out there, he's tough. He's gritty. He's everything that we want out of a Friday night starter. And I tell you what, he's just continues to make pitches and make guys look really bad. He hasn't really had that cutter going like he did early in the year, but he's been able to go to that curveball. And the curveballs, guys are just swinging and missing. They're not seeing it out of the hand. And if you're a two-seam curveball guy as a hitter, you have basically split the plate down the middle and say, look, I'm either going to look two-seam in or I've got to look curveball, slider, cutter away. You can't cover the whole plate. And guys are definitely guessing wrong because he's making them look really bad with that breaking ball.
In SEC play, here are Nolan's stats: Bubba, 25 in the third innings, a 1.78 ERA, a 0.87 WHIP. Teams are batting 196 against him. He's got 29 strikeouts. I don't have the walks written down, but I think it's four or five walks. I don't know that I expected him to pitch that well this early in SEC play. I thought maybe we might be seeing something closer to resembling this later in the year. And the way, with pitchers, it seems like a lot of times is, we talk about the hitters and they get more comfortable as the weather gets warmer. I think the same can be said for pitchers. It's very possible that we're only seeing Connor kind of scratch the surface of what he could become by the end of the year.
I think so, because if you're a two-seam guy and the weather's cold, it's hard to throw that two-seam fastball. It really is. And he's done a great job of gutting out a few performances on Friday night where the weather was not really good conditions for a sinker slider guy, but he's found a way to get it done. And I think it just goes back to his toughness, Matt. He's just mentally tough out there on the mound, and he's got stuff. And you're right, he doesn't have Isaiah Campbell stuff, but it's what's inside of him that count. And I go back to all the time, the analytics will tell you, one thing about a player, but what's inside of him doesn't show up on the page. That's the most important part when it comes to baseball.
Second game in Florida, Arkansas lost 7-2. Arkansas hit the Gators 10-9 in that game, but really I thought we saw this, throughout the weekend. Arkansas just had a lot of trouble driving in runs when they had runners in scoring position. They had a lot of runners left on base against Barco in the middle innings in Gainesville in game one. It happened to him in game two. And I was really surprised with how well Brandon Sproat pitched against Arkansas. His numbers coming into the game didn't suggest that he would be able to get out of those jams as well as he did.
Okay, so I talked to a couple of guys about Sproat. They said that his stuff was better than Barco. They said he was really good that day. And, on the scouting report, they had him more as a forcing guy, that kind of had trouble landing the breaking ball, wasn't consistent with it. But I tell you what, he ended up having a lot of movement on the fastball, late run on the fastball, which resulted in a lot of ground balls. Plus, he was able to work ahead with that breaking ball. And so I think he was better. He either had a really good game against the Razorbacks or he's way better than what the scouting report said, because he really did pitch a great game against us.
They had Blake Purnell come in and pitch the final 3 1/3 innings of that game. I believe he also closed the game on Sunday. He ends up being SEC Pitcher of the Week. And I think the thing that I was surprised by was that Arkansas just was not able to get to the Florida bullpen more often than they had, because this was a bullpen, like Mike Rooney told us last week, that really isn't your typical Florida bullpen, or at least maybe to this point in the season hasn't been your typical Florida bullpen. That's where the Gators have been really good throughout the years. They've been able to bring in like a Jack Leftwich last season. I don't know that they really have that type of pitcher this year. Maybe it's because those pitchers are younger pitchers like Purnell is. I thought that was really one of the keys, was that Arkansas wasn't able to get to the Florida bullpen. And that's where this team has been really successful, like you mentioned, getting the pitch count up of the starter and then really hammering the relievers. And it just didn't happen for whatever reason in Gainesville.
Yeah, and I think you just have to tip your hat to the bullpen. I think they just stepped up. Guys came in and really had good performances. Purnell was great. He pitched in all three games. So I don't know if it was Razorback hitting or just that the Florida pitching staff just did a real good job late in games of coming in and making pitches when they need them. You know, we hit Florida 40-25 on the weekend. Now, I know the bottom line is how many runs do you score, but we had runners on base. We just weren't able to get that big hit when we needed it. And I think a lot of that, you know, goes to the Florida pitchers making a pitch when they really need to. They dialed up the right pitch.
On Saturday in game three, Arkansas lost that one 9-7. The big play in that one, Bubba, was the error. The error by Tigert, throws toward first, throws it away. That puts a runner on second in scoring position with no outs in the bottom of the eighth inning. And it's going to be really hard to get yourself out of that situation.
I think so. And I think that's just a freshman mistake. The game kind of sped up on him a little bit. They knew the guy was going to bunt. It's on the scout that he was going to bunt. And so everyone kind of expected it. I think Brady just kind of rushed the throw a little bit. But the good thing about it is next time that happens, he'll make the play. And, you know, it may not happen again until we get into postseason. But next time it happens, he'll slow the game down a little bit, take his time and make a good throw to first and make that play. But you're right. That was big right there at that point in the game.
You know, Bechtrin, late December and especially during early January with the Razorback basketball team, when we did our basketball podcast, I kept mentioning that even though they were losing these games like Vanderbilt and Texas A&M, what I would see late in those games was that they would rally, you know, and they would put themselves in a position to win when you didn't think that there was really a chance for them to do that. And I kind of saw something similar in that last game against Florida. They had a lot of chances to fold in that game. They give up four runs to Florida, but then they come back the next inning and they answer with four runs, three of which came on the two out double by Zach Gregory. Florida hits another three run home run. They go up by three runs again. Arkansas kind of chips away at the lead. They tie it with Gregory's home run in the eighth inning. I think that maybe there's some character building with this team that you could see in that last game against Florida, where there were a lot of chances where they could have just mailed it in, but they kind of kept coming back. And, you know, if that game was another inning or two, maybe Arkansas ends up winning that game. It just seems like they had a really good mentality that day that they weren't going to give in against a good team in their home ballpark.
Well, one thing I can say is I don't think I've ever seen a Dave Van Horn team mail it in. So, but I do know what you're saying. But that,
I guess
you're
what
right.
I'm saying, this team, say like the Alabama game last year, there are games that get away from you, right? And
right.
This one could have gotten away from Arkansas, and it didn't get away from them. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I know. I didn't sound like a smart aleck there, but, you know, it's just the toughness of this team. And once again, it goes back to it's a reflection of Dave Van Horn and just his style of baseball. But you're right. As far as the fight and in this team, boy, I just knew they were going to win that game. Every time they came back, I'm like, all right, we got them right now, you know, and then Florida would score another run. But Zach Gregory came up huge. I mean, he really did. He did everything he could to win that game, 2 for 2. I really loved his the bases loaded double where he had full count, you know, worked the count, gets a pitch, hits it down the line for a double. I thought that was a huge at bat. I mean, the home run was good too. You know, he just jumped the fastball and hit it to right field. And I talk about it all the time. You know, anyone can jump a fastball and pull it into the wind. And he hit it a long ways and he crushed it, which is awesome. But those at-bats where you get up there and you grind out an at-bat, you know, bases loaded, two outs, full count, and you find a way to get it done. Find a way is something I say all the time to my players, find a way. And Zach Gregory just finds a way to get it done. And I thought that was huge right there.
I thought the big at bat of the game really was the two out walk that he took in the third inning against Brandon Neely. Didn't score any runs, but what it did was it kind of threw off his rhythm. I think at that point, Neely had only thrown like 25 pitches to retire eight batters. And then Gregory goes up there in the nine hole and he just kind of does what he does, starts taking pitches, makes it hard on the pitcher, kind of crowds the plate. And I feel like that makes a pitcher kind of uncomfortable when they face a player like Zach Gregory. And it really changed the whole course of the game. You felt like Neely, kind of like what we were talking about with Barco in game one, that maybe this is going to be a deal where his pitch count is going to be so low that he can go deep into the game. And then all of a sudden, by the next time that Gregory comes in, he'd thrown 73 pitches and he's gone.
Yeah, you're right. That's what makes him so valuable down at the bottom of the lineup. And Zach could hit anywhere in the lineup. He's a guy that's real patient at the plate. He typically takes a lot of pitches, but he will jump that first fastball every once in a while. You've seen him do it a couple of times to hit home runs early in the count, where he'll get a pitch that he likes and he'll hammer it. But for the most part, his best AB is when he goes up there and he's patient, works the count. Like you said, he's right on top of the plate. And I think that makes pitchers, you know, a little bit, they don't like it when a guy's standing right on top of the plate. Plus, he handles the ball out over the plate so well, you've got to bust him in, and you don't have much room for error in there, because if you just barely miss in, you hit him. And he's really good at getting hit by pitches. So he's real valuable in that lineup.
Let's talk about Brady Slavens for a minute. He had a wonderful midweek series against UAPB. The Razorbacks beat the Golden Lions twice on Tuesday by scores of 15-0 and 6-0. Both of those games were seven-inning games. Slavens, Bubba, goes 6-for-9, I believe, if I've got these numbers right, 6-for-9 with 9 RBI. I don't know how many extra base hits he had, but I know he had a double, he had a triple, had a couple home runs. Is Brady Slavens back, do you think, for this team? Are you seeing him hit like we saw him hit before the injury last year?
I think so, Matt. It was funny when he went into the two hole last night. We talked about it on the air, and I'm like, well, I just don't see Brady. I can see him hitting a lot of places. I don't see him as a two hole hitter. And you think back in the past, you think of some of the two hole hitters we've had in the past. You know, Hessen Kerstad was a two hole hitter. You know, David moved him into the two hole, and he did a great job for us. When you watch Brady last night, he acted like a two-hole hitter. In the first game, he was 4-for-5 with 6 RBIs, had 2 home runs. But what really impressed me, the second game, he was 2-for-3 with 3 RBIs. His first at-bat, he lined out to third base. Now, I don't remember the number. I want to say it was like 98 off the bat. It was a fastball away, and he went with it, hit a rocket right at the third baseman. His next at-bat, he drew a walk, but it was a 10-pitch walk. Fouled off some borderline pitches, took some close pitches, and drew a walk. And I said to something to Phil, I said, now, I guess he's starting to act like a two-hole hitter now. But anywhere that he is in a lineup, he could be a force and a factor. When he gets hot, and I want to say, you and I talked about it last week, when he gets hot, he can carry a lineup. And right now, he hit some balls last night against that wind. He hit a ball 104 to center field that went over the fence through about a 25-mile-an-hour wind. I didn't think there's any way anyone could hit a ball that far into that wind, but he did. He backspun that thing, and it was a changeup on the outer part of the plate, and that shows how much power he's got.
Arkansas hit 3 home runs against UAPB. Bubba, that brings their season total down to 49, but 26 of those 49 have come in the last 10 games. What do you think the difference has been in this team in their ability to hit home runs versus what it was early in the year? We talked a lot about the wind. Is it just an issue of playing with better wind, or do you see something different at the plate with their approach?
I think it's more approach-wise, to be honest with you. I think we're having better at-bats than we were early in the year. I think, you know, when a team struggles a little bit early in the year, we weren't scoring a lot of runs. Guys start to press. They try to do too much. Hitting's contagious, but so's not hitting. And I think guys were just trying to do a little too much. And I think now guys are starting to settle in. You know, plus it's getting warmer. Warm weather as a hitter, you want warm weather, Matt. It really sucks when it's – and wind's one thing, but the wind and the cold together, it's not conducive for hitters. And so I think the weather warming up, kind of the approach, I think all that has a factor. And I still go back and say, look, there's been several balls. Brady hit another ball last night that normally goes out in most ballparks in America, you know, that ended up hitting off the wall in right center. But, you know, I do think the weather warming up, the plate, I think that's been a huge factor. And just you know, these guys, the power's in that lineup. You look up and down, guys can pop one up and down that lineup. There's no doubt. So I think it's you're gonna see that total keep going up.
When Dave Van Horn spoke at the Swatters Club about a week and a half ago, and he kind of reiterated this on the radio show with Phil on Tuesday, you know, one of the common themes I think in hearing from him is that he doesn't think this team is anywhere near as good as it can be. They're really pleased that they're winning games, but they think they can play a lot better. And I think that bodes well for the team, because what we've seen with Van Horn through the years is that, you know, you really see him start to kind of, it's like a good, like a racehorse trainer. You know, they get that racehorse ready to, you know, run at peak level, you know, at the right time. And I think you kind of see that with Van Horn with his baseball teams. They kind of hit their stride a lot of times in mid to late May, and then they're playing really well once they get into June. And I think that's why you've seen them go to the World Series so many times. So he's talked about that a lot here lately, Bubba. And one of the things that I keep hearing him kind of maybe hint at or refer to is that, you know, there may be some lineup changes coming, maybe not in personnel, but in terms of how they're structuring their lineup, where players hit in the batting order. And then after the game against UAPB yesterday, you know, he hinted at there may be some reshuffling coming in the bullpen where pitchers are coming out. I wonder where you think this team is right now in those two areas, and what some of those changes might be based on what we've seen.
I think you nailed it, Matt. I see this every year out of Dave Van Horn teams. You know, we're okay. You know, we find a way to win games because we do the fundamentals. We do the little things that other teams don't do, but we're not clicking on all cylinders. And I see so much more, especially in the lineup, and still some guys out of that bullpen, you know, that have stuff that just need to come in and learn to command that stuff and get outs. But man, there's so much talent in this lineup. And once it's all clicking, it's going to be dangerous. And you see it every year. It's kind of the pieces to the puzzle. They all start to come together as we get a little bit deeper into the season. And Dave's the master at putting it all together. If you ask me about the lineup, there's been several people move around. I think that two hole is a really important spot. I mean, you look at Caden Wallace. I would have never expected him to be a leadoff hitter. He stepped into that leadoff role and done a great job. Now, if he's going to stay there, who knows? I mean, Zach Gregory's leading the team in on base percentage. Zach could find his way to the leadoff spot, but you know, I think Caden's done a great job up there. I just think there's a ton of options, and you know, if we can get Jace Borfin going, and that's going to make Dave's decisions really hard, because that's another left-handed bat we need to get in that lineup. So someone's going to have to move out of there. So I don't know. I guess it's a good problem to have, Matt, but it's tough when everyone's hitting, you're like, there's not enough places on the field for everybody.
I wanted to ask you about Arkansas taking the first pitch, because this is something I hear from fans a lot, that they're really upset how many pitches they see go by hitters. But when you break down the game film, it seems like Arkansas is actually benefiting itself by some of the decisions they're making at the plate. I just took one game, Bubba, to analyze, and it's game 3 against Florida. In that game, Arkansas had 42 at-bats. They swung at the first pitch 11 times, most of which were early in the game, and that's why you saw the getting through those innings pretty quickly. They were really aggressive, and they were, you know, popping up, flying out, grounding out on the first, second, third at bat of the sequence quite a bit in those first few innings. You saw them kind of get a little bit more deliberate, like we said, in the middle innings. But 42 at bats, they swing at 11 first pitches. In the 31 at bats where they didn't swing at the first pitch, 19 times it went to a 1-0 count. And in 10 of those 19 1-0 counts, the runner gets on base. And so what I'm seeing is that when they get into these 1-0 counts, that they're being selective with their pitches that they're swinging at. You're not seeing them swing at a lot of pitches outside the zone. That it's that 1-0 count that usually leads to a lot of success for them. They had 13 base runners in game 3. 10 came when I did not to swing at the first pitch and got into a 1-0 count.
That goes right along with my philosophy. I'll tell you what I believe in, Matt. And a lot of people, they don't know the difference between a strike and a quality strike. And there's a huge difference in the two. I don't want my hitters. I teach my guys to go up to the plate. First two strikes are yours, third strikes for the team. So till you get to two strikes, get a pitch you can handle, get a pitch you can crush. Now, obviously with a runner at third base, less than two outs, that changes. The infield's back, guy throws you a fastball away. If a ground ball to second scores a run, hit a ground ball to second. But other than that, I preach to my guys, if you can't hit a double on the first pitch, don't swing. I work a ton on 0-0 counts because that's such a pivotal time. The pitchers want to get that one pitch out, right? Hitters want to be aggressive. They want to attack the ball. But there's no need to go up there and swing at a first pitch two seamer down and away if you're a lefty. Because first pitch, if you're a lefty facing a righty, that two seamer down and away, that the job of that pitch is to get you out. Pitchers want to throw that breaking ball. Well, what do you hit better, fastballs or sliders? You know, let's hunt a fastball. Get a pitch you like early in the count and crush it. And it goes back to the, you know, kind of the thing I say all the time. If you can't hit a double, don't swing. And then, but there are scouting reports. I mean, these guys know what's coming a lot of the time because these guys have percentages on, you know, this is what he's going to do. With a runner in scoring position, this is what's going to happen. And a lot of times the percentages are what they are. I mean, that's their style of pitching. That's what the staff believes in. That's what the pitching coach believes in, the organization, however you want to look at it. So I just think people don't understand, to my first point, the difference in a strike versus a quality strike. And I love what you said about a lot of times when they take that and they get to the 1-0 count, that's when they do some damage right there. I could talk all day about pitch selection and just an approach at the plate. And that's where it's at. That's where the money's at right there, is just being able to control the at bat. I want my hitters to control the at bat. I know Nate Thompson, he wants his guys to step up to the plate and control the at bat. Don't let that pitcher dictate the action. You dictate the action. You know what your strengths are. You know what your weaknesses are. You know what the situation in a game is. Go up there and take advantage of it.
I think there's a difference, Bubba, in taking pitches and the term that Nate Thompson uses, which is they're hunting a certain pitch, whether it be a 2-0 fastball or a 1-1 slide or whatever it might be. You know, they're hunting that one pitch, and sometimes it's going to cause a pitch to go by you, and it may be the best pitch that you see during the at bat. But I think that more often than not, that philosophy of hunting pitches keeps them from chasing pitches outside the zone. And now that's not the case with everybody. You know, we've seen, like, Slavens, for instance. He had a lot of issues earlier this year where he was chasing pitches out of the zone. But I just don't see, like, or I don't feel like you see this team chase a whole lot of pitches, maybe as much as you would see some of these more free swinging teams.
No, I think you're right. I'll tell you, a long time ago, I had a talk with Todd Helton, and you probably remember who Todd Helton is. He was a really good hitter with the Rockies. Talking to him about hitting, he said, "Hey, Bubba," he said, "it's easy to go up to the plate and look fastball and take the off-speed pitch." He said, "What's hard is go up to the plate, look breaking ball, take the fastball, because you're so conditioned to swing at the fastball." He said, "Once I learned to go up there and be comfortable sitting off speed and then taking the fastball if I was wrong," he said, "I became a good hitter." And I think about that a lot, and it's huge. It really does make sense, and it's so true. And you'll see our guys go up there a lot of times, and you can tell they're sitting off speed. You can tell their timing of when they load, when they stride. They're sitting on off-speed timing. And I think the key early in the count is pick a speed. If you're hunting fastball, be on fastball timing. If you're hunting the slider or the curveball, be on curveball timing. But whatever timing you're on, you've got to take that other pitch. You can't switch the two up right there. It's a philosophy, and I love it. And I love what Nate talks about is being the hunter up there. Another thing, I'm giving you all my little phrases right now. People probably don't care about it, but the other thing I say all the time is be the hunter, not the prey. When you step up to the plate, you're the hunter. You're the one in control right there. Be a hunter, hunt your pitch, and hammer it when you get it.
I think more often than not, Arkansas's lineup has been performing well lately. You think about Florida, they had two games where the number of runs that they scored should have won them a game. It's just we haven't seen Arkansas's pitching staff give up a whole lot of runs very often like they did in game three. Really, over the stretch of the last 10 games or so, game three against Mississippi State, game two against Florida, those would probably be the only ones where you would say that Arkansas's lineup didn't show up and play to its potential. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy, voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's best day spa and best massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know it never goes out of style? A great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location, too, on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
If you look at the SEC West standings right now, it might look kind of like a football SEC West standings. Really surprising when you look at the teams that are high up in the West right now and the teams that are low down in the division. The two Mississippi schools who are, like it or not, kind of like baseball royalty in the SEC, they are at the bottom of the SEC West through 4 weeks. These were the two teams who were expected to challenge Arkansas for the Western Division crown this year. Ole Miss and Mississippi State are both 4-8. The Rebels were swept last week by Alabama. Very surprising outcome. Mississippi State left Fayetteville and they were swept by LSU. You've got Auburn and Alabama right there, two teams that are typically down low in the SEC standings. Both of them are tied with LSU at 7-5, one game back of Arkansas going into this week's series. Really surprising to see Auburn and Alabama up that high and the Mississippi schools down that low right now.
Well, it really is. And you know, what's crazy is to think is last week, I want to say we had a 2.5-game lead, and now it's crazy how everything can change in 1 week, but that's life in the SEC. And I'm telling you, Matt, with the transfer portal, the COVID seniors, all that stuff, there's so much parity right now. There's so much talent out there in the SEC or all over college baseball. Anything can happen from week to week. And so I tell you, we got a challenge for us this weekend coming in. LSU's hot right now. So it's going to be a good weekend for us. It's going to be a great weekend of baseball, but all around the SEC, it is every weekend. I'm just amazed at some of the things that you see happen, like the Alabama sweep of Ole Miss. Who would have ever thought that? I would have never thought LSU would go into Duke Noble and sweep Mississippi State.
Yeah, not only did Alabama beat Ole Miss, but they swept them in Oxford. That was the really surprising thing. Other outcomes last week, mentioned LSU over Mississippi State. Tennessee swept Missouri, although Missouri gave Tennessee a few scares during that series. They tied on them late into a couple of those games. Other results, Georgia beat South Carolina twice. Auburn beat Vanderbilt twice. That was a kind of a surprising outcome. Vanderbilt's lost three series right now. We'll talk about that more here in just a minute. And Texas A&M beat Kentucky twice, including once in extra innings. Bubba, I think one of the big questions right now in the SEC is what's going on with Ole Miss and what's going on with Vanderbilt. These are both teams that have been number one in the coaches poll within the last month. Ole Miss is out of the rankings now. Vanderbilt's falling very quickly. Both of these teams, I think, have lost their last three series. And it's kind of surprising because, again, these were supposed to be two of the teams that were going to not only challenge for division titles, but a conference title, and a lot of people thought they'd be competing for a national title.
Well, you know, it's hard to figure out Vandy because if you look, they're third in the conference in team batting, and then pitching wise, they're second in the conference with a 3.0 ERA, and so you put those two together, and they should be winning, but they're just finding ways to lose. Now, when you look at Ole Miss, they're just struggling for starting pitching. They're going in, they've got TBA just about every game. They can't find guys to start games and get outs. And so as good as their offense was predicted to be, you know, they're ninth and they're 11th in the SEC in hitting with a .284 average. They're behind the Razorbacks. And there was all this talk about how good their offense was going to be. But really the problem with Ole Miss has been pitching. They're just struggling to get outs. And so, you know, that's it's good for me to see that, because I'm not a huge Ole Miss fan, as you know, Matt.
What about Alabama and Auburn? Do you think those teams are for real?
I do. I really do. To do what they did, to what they've been doing. I mean, for Auburn, 2 out of 3 from Vandy. Alabama to go into Ole Miss, and if you go in there and sweep, I mean, you got to be for real. I think they've got a lot of talent. You know, I haven't really gotten into the numbers with Alabama or Auburn, to be honest with you, just other than just glancing at their stats. But I mean, so far where they're at, I mean, they got to be for real.
I always like to look at a team's outcomes the year before and see how many close games they played in, because I have this theory that a lot of times if a team loses a lot of close games one year, the next year, if they've got a lot of their players back, which Auburn does, they're going to win a lot of close games. And I think Auburn, what was it, Bubba? They lost like 13 or 14 1 or 2 run games in the SEC a year ago. They gave Arkansas maybe one of the biggest scares that it had of the regular season in that series in early April. And now they get those players back. Butch Thompson seems to have always been able to hit. They usually play pretty good defensively. And I think what you're seeing is that those close calls a year ago are starting to pay off, and they've learned from them. They've learned how to win.
I think so. One thing I say a lot, Matt, is you learn more from losing than you do winning. And I think Auburn learned a lot from those losses last year. And I think guys have stepped it up this year. They've been through it before. They know what it's all about. And I think you see right now in the results, some of the games they're playing, that they did learn from last year, and they're a force to be reckoned with down the road.
Notable midweek outcome this week in the SEC: Tennessee lost to Tennessee Tech 3-2. They played at Smoky Stadium in Kodak, Tennessee. That's a double-A stadium in the Smokies. They decided to use wood bats in that game, Bubba, instead of aluminum bats. And given what happened with Tennessee during that series against Vanderbilt a couple of weeks ago, there are going to be people that try to, you know, create some correlations between that. You know, but for the Vols to lose, I think that snapped, what, like a 23-game winning streak? That was an incredible run they were on. And I think I'm surprised more than anything to see that it was Tennessee Tech, who's been a pretty good program. Remember, they went to Ole Miss and won a regional a few years ago, but to see Tennessee Tech be the one that ends the streak, I guess that just goes to show you that anything can happen in baseball.
Yeah, I don't know when that decision was made to go wood bat, but that whoever the PR person is didn't put a lot of thought in that, because especially losing that game, you know, it does raise a few red flags. It's like, okay, wait, all of a sudden they get beat 3-2. They've been lighting up the scoreboard every day, and then they go to a wood bat and they get away from their bats that don't have stickers on them. It's a little fishy. I don't know, Matt.
This week's SEC rankings: Tennessee is number 1, Arkansas is number 5, Georgia is number 10, LSU, who comes to Baumwalker Stadium this weekend, is number 12, Vanderbilt and Florida are tied for 17th. The Gators moved up 5 spots in the coaches poll after beating Arkansas last week in Gainesville. Auburn is number 22. This week's SEC series: Texas A&M's at Georgia, Alabama is at Tennessee, Florida's at Vanderbilt, Ole Miss is at South Carolina, Kentucky's at Missouri, and Auburn is at Mississippi State. And of course, we mentioned that LSU comes to Fayetteville. 5 of the 7 series this week begin on Thursday, and that's because a lot of teams don't want to play on Easter Sunday. And so if the teams agree to it, most often what you see during this week now in SEC play, at least, is that the teams will begin on Thursday. They'll play Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. And of course, that's what you're going to see this weekend at Fayetteville. The SEC Report is brought to you by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, the best burgers in 2 towns. Visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from the ballpark. Skip the line and order online or download the app in your app store. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers: when all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. And Bubba, I want to talk to you about Hunter Barco. I know you've been ready to do this segment for a while. Just looked like a total head case, if you ask me, during that game against Arkansas. And there were moments where, you know, he was, you know, dog cussing either the player or the umpire. You couldn't tell who it was. There was a moment where he went off the field, and you know, I don't know if he was trying to act like a tough guy or what, but he had to be restrained by his teammates, where it looked like maybe he was going to go back out and argue with the umpire. Number one, I'm surprised that a veteran umpire like Scott Kennedy, and you also had Tony Walsh on that field this weekend, that, you know, veteran umpires like that would allow that type of those type of antics to be going on from a pitcher. That's my first thought. My second thought is that, you know, I think it was Dave Jorn who I've heard talk about this a little bit, but it's basically about how a pitcher has to, you know, use so much energy when they're in the middle of their outing. And any energy that you're using on complaining about the strike zone, you know, any energy that you're using in getting worked up emotionally, that's going to take away from your ability to pitch. And, you know, I think you can draw a straight line between where Barco really began to come unwound, barking at the players, barking at the umpires, and to where, you know, that outing went from potentially being a really great outing for him to unraveling after five innings.
And another thing, Matt, I'm surprised that O'Sullivan puts up with that. You know, he's a guy that it just surprises me that he allows that. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's tampered down a little bit going into this Thursday start for Florida, because you take a guy like that acts like that, and you can compare the two. You and I talked about it earlier. So if you go back and look at Connor Nolan, he got a 3-2 pitch called a ball. That was it was close. It could have gone either way. It's kind of that 50-50 pitch. He gets the ball back, goes out, makes the next pitch, gets an out on the next pitch to the next batter. You look at Hunter Barco, same pitch, off the plate just a little bit, 50-50, probably could have gone either way. He totally loses it, and then you see the wheels kind of fall off. You know, he's cussing at the umpire. To me, that's the difference in a guy that I want on the mound and a guy I don't want on the mound. Once again, you look at the analytics. Hunter Barco, analytics, his numbers are great, but it's what's inside that counts. If I'm a major league scout watching that, I'm like, I don't want this guy, because you got to be able to deal with adversity when you're pitching at a high level. And to Dave Jorn's point, you know, that takes a lot of energy right there. It's a lot of focus away from what you're supposed to be doing. Your job when you're pitching is to get on the mound. You're trying to get an out with that pitch. If you don't get an out with that pitch, you get an out with the next pitch. And it's all about executing pitches. Well, you let all those other things, you start those antics start, you start yelling at the umpire, the other team's players. First of all, that fires up the other team, but it also, umpires don't like being shown up. So you bark at him a little bit, you call him a couple of names. Next thing you know, that strike zone seems to shrink just a little bit. But I just think it was just to superimpose the two together, Connor Nolan, Hunter Barco, that says a whole lot about those two guys and who the Razorbacks have versus who Florida has on the mound on a Friday night.
So you've scouted for the Yankees in the past. Let's say you're scouting that game. What kind of report are you giving on Hunter Barco based on, you know, like you said? I mean, this is something that scouts are looking for. And I mean, is it a huge red flag? Is it just a small one?
Unfortunately, it's not enough of a red flag to a lot of guys because they're so caught up in the numbers. I'll tell you, Jalal Leach is a teammate I played with years ago, played with him in the Yankee organization. Then he went on to play in the big leagues with the Giants. His son Dante was on the team last night, UAPB. And I talked to Jalal Leach right before the game. He's a scout now with the Marlins. He's been with several organizations. He's on the professional side, on the major league side right now. And he said his job basically is to write up reports. And he's like, Bubba, he said, it's frustrating because it's so much just the numbers and the analytics that we're past. We don't rely on our eyes enough. What we see now, it's all about the numbers. And so unfortunately, when it comes down to a major league draft, too many guys are going to go over those numbers and look at his numbers and his analytics and say, yeah, I want that guy. Look what he can do. And they'll worry about the character part of it later, where for me, the character weighs in huge for me, because the analytics will tell you what a guy is right now. The makeup and the character of a player tells you what he's going to be down the road and long-term. And so, cause you're going to deal with failure. And if you can't cope with a little bit of failure in an SEC game on a Thursday night, good luck when you get down the road and you're pitching on a major league field, major league game in front of, you know, 40,000 fans. So I know that's a long answer, Matt, but I hope that answers your question, what I really feel about it.
We saw and we heard Dave Van Horn get upset with the home plate umpire, Jeff Macias, during the Friday game. I keep getting it confused because there's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But during game two against Florida, Macias got on Van Horn pretty early. I think it was maybe the second inning that Van Horn got a warning for arguing the balls and strikes. And you know, we heard Van Horn on the pregame show Saturday with Phil Elson, You know, he didn't really hold back talking about how frustrated he was with the way that all went down. They were not happy with that performance. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about Hagan Smith and how he didn't get some of those calls. And, you know, he's definitely been a different pitcher away from home. I have to wonder how much that strike zone affected him mentally and, you know, kind of maybe got him off of his game early in that outing against Florida. But just kind of what were your thoughts, what you saw from the umpire on Friday?
Well, going back and watching some of the pitches, Dave Van Horn's right. Some of those pitches, I don't know. They were strikes. Now, I don't know if they were just trying to get, you know, since Hunter Barco had just made a fool of himself on Thursday night, things kind of got out of control. Maybe they were just trying to, hey, early on say, this is a strike zone. I don't want to hear any complaints. But to me, it looked, and I don't say this very often, some umpires are bad, but they're typically bad both ways. Jeff Macias was bad, and it was more one-sided bad. When you go back and look at some of the strikes that were called balls, I mean, it was bad. But I thought Hagan did a good job of keeping his composure. But what he had to do, Matt, was he basically felt like he had to groove the ball. And I think he left some pitches up. Normally, he's pitching down in the zone. He's real effective down in the zone. You know, he'll get some chases up high in the zone, but his best stuff is down in the zone, and he wasn't getting those calls. And I really think it made him groove pitches. Therefore, he ended up getting hit. You know, some balls got hit hard, but, you know, it's a little bit frustrating. I know everyone keeps talking about, well, the SEC is evaluating their umpires. Well, I want to know what they're doing. Like, what's the, you know, what actions are being taken when a guy's bad, because it was clearly the strike zone was not good that day.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot! So I can just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pit crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No thank you. You're doing awesome! Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
LSU comes to Fayetteville this week for three games. The Tigers ranked number 12 in the coaches poll. The Razorbacks are ranked number 5. Game time 6:30 on Thursday. That game will be on SEC Network Plus. Friday's game will start at 6, and it will be televised by SEC Network. And then on getaway day, Saturday, the Razorbacks and Tigers are scheduled to play at 2 o'clock on SEC Network Plus, although there is some weather on Saturday that might mess with that game time, so stay tuned there. LSU comes into the weekend 23-9 overall, 7-5 in the SEC. And as we mentioned earlier, they're coming off that big weekend win at Mississippi State, where they swept the Bulldogs by scores of 5-2 and 4-3, a couple of close back and forth games. And then LSU ran the Bulldogs out of Duty Noble Field 13-3 in the final game on Sunday. The week ahead is brought to you by the Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes, staffed with ASE-certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services with their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you, a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. Bubba, this is, like I said, always one of those series that people circle whenever LSU is coming to Fayetteville. It reminds me a little bit of what I know about when the Razorbacks played Texas in the Southwest Conference. Always, I guess, the big series for you guys, especially when they would come to George Cole Field. Do you see that comparison between these two teams?
Well, Matt, I agree with what you said. There's a lot of similarities between LSU today and Texas back in the day. It's a team that when they come in, it just feels a little bit different. You know, we talked about Mississippi State being a big series last weekend, but when LSU comes to town, it has a different feel. I know the fans really want to beat LSU. I think Ole Miss is kind of in that same category. For me, at least, I hate losing to Ole Miss, so my juices really get flowing when Ole Miss comes to town. But I think this is a game they've marked on their schedule, and they really want to win this weekend.
You mentioned Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I think people, if they look at social media, they might think that Arkansas and Tennessee are the biggest baseball rivals since the Red Sox and Yankees. But where do you look at, you know, rivalries with Arkansas and kind of a hierarchy of rivalries, if you will? Because to me, it seems like LSU's at the top. But I also look at this from an Arkansas perspective, where Arkansas has had a lot of years where they've come really close to beating LSU and couldn't do it. Now, the last couple of times they've met, last year in Baton Rouge in 2019 in Fayetteville, Arkansas did get the job done. But you know, there have been a lot of big misses to LSU, whether it be in Omaha, whether it be in Hoover, whether it be a late season series that might decide the SEC West Championship. I think that's where my perspective comes to say that LSU's at the top of what I think Arkansas baseball fans would probably consider a rivalry. But you know, there have been a lot of meaningful games with other teams, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, as you mentioned. There are a lot of teams that you could, and I guess maybe as you're a more successful program, this is how it works. But there are a lot of teams, I think, that you could make a nice case for these being, you know, big rivals for Razorback baseball.
I think so. And I think LSU's always been a big rivalry. But, you know, a team that's kind of crept in thanks to last year, Tony Vitale, the scene at home plate. I think if you ask a lot of Razorback fans, I would think a lot of them are going to point to Tennessee. And if they could pick a team to come to Baum Walker and play this year, I think most fans would pick Tennessee right now because they really want to beat Tennessee. I think Dave Van Horn, anytime someone feels like DVH got disrespected, which they feel like he did by Tony Vitale last year, I think that's the one that they want to beat them. They want to beat down on Tennessee. You know, I look at that different. I was mad about it last year, Matt, but that's two competitive coaches just having it out at home plate. And that happens when it comes to the game of baseball. But back on the topic of what you really ask about, I think LSU's always a rivalry. I think Ole Miss has turned into a big rivalry just because of the kind of the hatred that a lot of people have towards Ole Miss. And I think that's spilled over. And I think it's, you know, when it comes to baseball, we really want to beat them. We don't like their antics, their Bush League stuff they do from the start of the game to the end of the game. We don't like the powder blue uniforms. I think there's just so many things that I'm probably speaking a little bit, you know, for myself, but I know a lot of people feel the same way about Ole Miss, but it is going to be a fun weekend. I'm looking forward to it. And I really hope the fans pack out Baum Walker this weekend because they could play a big factor in the outcome of the game.
And when Texas comes to the SEC in a few years, Bubba, can you imagine if Arkansas and Texas kind of stay at the level where they are right now? And there's no reason to think that they won't. What a Friday night, a Saturday night game at Baum Walker will be like between a couple of highly ranked Arkansas and Texas teams.
Oh my goodness. I can't wait to see that. That is going to be a lot of fun. That's definitely something I'm going to mark on my calendar, but yeah, that's going to be fun seeing that. And I don't know. There's just the SEC is so good. And I think different people have their teams that they really want to beat. And I think once Texas comes over, I think if you mark that down, that's probably going to be top of the heap for most Razorback fans, especially anyone that's over probably what about the age of 40. They're going to want to definitely crush Texas when they come to town. So we'll definitely pack that place out.
I always tell people that Arkansas, Texas, that's a big rivalry. And in football and basketball, but in baseball, it has the potential to be something really, really special when the Longhorns get to the SEC. We mentioned a few times that LSU has a new coach this year. Jay Johnson came over from Arizona, took the Wildcats to the College World Series two times. They came really close to winning a national championship with Arizona. He was their head coach when they got beat by Coastal Carolina in the national championship series in 2016. It's a little weird, Bubba, to see LSU come in and Paul Maneri not be in the dugout because, you know, kind of like with Norm DeBrien and Dave Van Horn, I know LSU had that period where between Skip Bertman and Maneri, but so much of its program, I feel like, is wrapped up in those two head coaches. And so to see somebody new in that dugout this weekend is going to be a little bit odd.
It is going to be. And I don't know a lot about Jay Johnson, but when he was hired at LSU, I went back and looked because I'm a Y guy. I want to know, why did they hire this guy, a West Coast guy, to come in and coach, you know, at LSU? But when you listen to him talk, I really like the way he talks about the game of baseball. He talks a lot like a Dave Van Horn, talking about the fundamentals, just competitive attitude of his players. He says all the right things. And so, you know, I think he's going to be a really good fit. I think he's going to be a guy that can bring in good players to LSU. Of course, LSU is it's an easy place to recruit to, but I think he's going to be a good fit there. And you kind of see they got off to a slow start. And I think, you know, maybe that was him kind of finding out, you know, who his players are, who fits where. But I think things are coming together for LSU right now, and he seems to be a good fit for the program.
LSU's got such a great lineup. I mean, you look at their stats, they've got four players, everyday players, who are batting 326 or higher. You know, we saw Trey Morgan and Dylan Cruz last year when they were freshmen. They've added Jacob Berry, who was the national freshman of the year a year ago at Arizona. He came over with Jay Johnson. Cade Doty is another really good player. One of the better lineups, if not the best lineup that Arkansas has seen so far. I know Kentucky was good, but I feel like LSU is a cut above that.
I think so. When I was going through, I've got seven batters hitting over 300 in their lineup. So they're definitely going to be good top to bottom. There's in the beginning, I thought a little bit top heavy, but then when you start looking at the numbers, there's not a lot of weak links in that lineup. But I think that's going to play, once again, their style, though, they're an aggressive team. I think that's going to play right into Connor Nolan's hand, you know, with the way that he pitches, you know, and then we'll see what happens going into Friday and Saturday with Hagan Smith and Jackson Wiggins. But with the stuff that our starters have, I still feel really good about it.
Jacob Berry, this is a potential first round draft pick when he's eligible. He comes into this game this weekend. He's hit 10 home runs and 34 RBI. I think that there was some question about whether or not he could take the type of numbers that he was having a year ago in the Pac-12 and whether or not that would translate into the SEC. And so far it really has, Bubba. And you know, he's a player that I think you got to watch for potential SEC player of the year.
I think so. Going off of right now, what he's done, I mean, he looks like the real deal. And, you know, a lot of guys that have big numbers out West, when they come this way, you're like, they're not going to be quite as good, but boy, he's lived up to all the hype so far. Now it's still early in the season. Talk to me next week, and we'll see what we think about him.
LSU pitching, they'll start most likely Mikhail Hilliard on Thursday night against Connor Nolan. He did not start the season as their number one pitcher. Blake Money did. Blake Money was their number two pitcher a week ago against Mississippi State. And then in game three, they threw Samuel Dutton, although they said TBA. And I think the way LSU has been pitching in game three of their series, Bubba, has been more kind of, you know, by committee bullpen type game. Grant Taylor came in and pitched really well for them at Mississippi State. Four innings, gave up two runs, had six strikeouts. And if that name sounds familiar, it's Evan Taylor's little brother, who's going to be coming to Baum Walker Stadium this weekend. So, you know, that's an interesting deal for the Taylor family. They've been in Baum Walker before when Colin and Evan were teammates, and now they're going to be there this weekend when they see a couple of their sons potentially pitch against each other in the same game, given how big they've been to, you know, each of the team's bullpens. It wouldn't surprise to see them get into the same game.
It's going to be fun to see what the parents are wearing. Are they going to wear a Arkansas shirt, LSU hat, or it'll be kind of interesting to see what they end up wearing when they come to the game. Or are they just going to be completely neutral?
Maybe they'll wear a UAB hat. That's where Colin is right now. Did you see, I think a couple, 3 weeks ago, Evan, Colin, and Grant all got wins in the same weekend. I think it might have been on three consecutive days. I don't know that that's ever happened in college baseball. We had three different brothers get wins for three different teams.
You know, it's funny. I read that. Either someone sent it to me or maybe it came up on Twitter. I can't remember, but I read that article. That's pretty cool. And that's good. That's fun for the family. It's fun for the kids. So that's a neat story.
You really like this LSU bullpen. You think they've got some good arms.
I do. You know, you look at the outs when you start getting late in a game in SEC, outs are really hard to get. You look at what the Razorbacks had do 7th, 8th, and 9th innings were really good, especially in the 8th inning. So outs as you get closer to the end of the game are tough. And you look at some of the numbers of some of these guys, they've got five guys holding opponents batting average under 200, well under 200. And so you look at those numbers and it's a little bit, you get a little bit, you get a little bit scary when you get towards the end of a game. You would definitely want to try to have a lead going into those latter innings. I think the key is for us to attack them early in the game and get on those starters. But because their bullpen, they've got some guys down there that can throw it.
The LSU series is always that series that I think the bean counters, they love, because if the weather's good, LSU is going to draw a big crowd. We haven't seen a whole lot of really big crowds this year at Baum Walker Stadium. We did see it a little bit on the game two against Mississippi State. I was really surprised to see so many empty seats on the Friday night against Mississippi State. Now, it was one of the bigger crowds they've had this year, but it just seems to me like, you know, on Friday night's SEC game, you've got the reigning national champion coming in. It was good weather, good first pitch time. It just seemed like there'd be a lot more people in the ballpark. You know, I'm really hopeful to see Baum Walker be what we're used to Baum Walker being for these big series this weekend, and see people come out and watch a baseball game, because it's just such a great feeling when you're in that stadium and it's full and there's that buzz in the air. And I don't know that we've really had a game where it's been like that this year.
We haven't had that big game where that Friday night feel where the place is just buzzing, the concourse is full, the hog calls are going. We haven't really had that, but I really think it has a lot to do with the weather, Matt. Even though, you know, Mississippi State, the weather was all right, but it was still really windy. It just hasn't been, and people don't like to sit there with the wind blowing in their face, and it's just not I just don't think it's been conducive for big crowds, but I think LSU coming in this weekend, I think we're going to pack that place in, and hopefully the weather's going to stay good. I know there's a slight chance of rain later on Saturday, but, you know, hopefully we'll get this place packed in, because I really think people are looking forward to this weekend and that LSU matchup.
And that Saturday game is going to come 1 hour after the end of an open football practice. They're not having a red-white game this year for football, but they are having an open practice on Saturday that kind of serves like the red-white game has in the past. And those are days where you typically see a lot of people come down from Razorback Stadium and catch a baseball game too when they're in town. And so Saturday has the potential to be a really big crowd.
Yeah, let's get this rain out of here. That way we can pack the place in, because we really, there's nothing better. Baum Walker, when it's packed, it's the best environment in college baseball. So let's hope if anyone's listening, you guys need to all come out and show up on this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Hope you'll come to WholeHogSports.com all weekend to catch our coverage of Arkansas LSU. We'll also have plenty from the Razorbacks football scrimmage that's going to occur Saturday morning inside Razorback Stadium. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, and we'll see you again next week.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.